Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle stories and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. Today, we are welcoming / preparing to learn from Eric Wolterkins, president, owner, founder of Kings Ridge Media. Eric, how are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. I'm excited because, Eric, I know your main gig is to help people sell stuff on Amazon. Is that right?
Pretty much, yes. I'm also a seller on Amazon myself, but yeah, it's really turned towards aiding other sellers and building their businesses.
Sure. So an interesting thing happened this year where it seems like everybody stopped going places and they just ordered stuff online. Sometimes when I look at my front porch, I believe that my wife is solely keeping Amazon in business. But I look at other front porches and I feel like, oh, I guess she's not alone. So apparently there's something to do, something powerful with that platform. So let's let's start with how you got started in this whole game.
Well, I started about 13 years ago. It basically kind of to give the short version of it. A friend of mine, if anybody out there remembers when there used to be used CD stores and music stores out there, a friend of mine approached me and said, we should really start one of these. He's like, I've seen what the one in our local area was doing in sales. And he says, it's phenomenal, blah, blah, blah. So we kind of started down the road of looking at starting one of these stores. And we got into it. We ended up going to a franchisor. We went through the meeting of sitting there talking to him about starting one of these stores. And couple months into it, into the planning process of it, I realized that while my friend would be a very good employee for the store, that if we were going to really start this, it was going to be all on my shoulders. I was probably 24 at the time and spending the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars it would have cost us to start this store was overwhelming to me. And I eventually said, I don't want to do this. And we had accrued a lot of inventory to start the store at that point in time. And he said, well, what am I going to do with all this stuff I bought? So initially I went to him and I said, well, why don't we sell it online? He had no interest in that. So then I ended up just buying all the inventory from him. And that's kind of what started it all. I just,
wow. Old TVs and stuff like that for
inventory? No, it was just media. It's just books and CDs.
Okay. So there's still probably a space issue of some kind, right?
Yeah. And when I say it was a lot, it really wasn't a lot. I mean, we had just begun that process. So, I mean, a month in, I mean, there was thousands of items. There was not thousands upon thousands of items.
All right. And did you acquire these one by one or pallets at a time or?
Mostly what it was just buying like big lots, finding a person that was just trying to offload their entire collection. And we would just buy that collection up, going to rummage sales and buying the entire, everything they had at a rummage sale.
Wow.
So
yeah. They love seeing you. I get my weekend back.
So
your initial plan was to set up a brick and mortar retail store, just reselling stuff.
Right.
All right. And you figured, I guess, what area was this in? Was this Appleton?
Yeah, it was up in Appleton.
Okay.
We were going to do it. So it would have been indirect competition with the place we were seeing how much they were doing because they were also in Appleton. So.
All right. Yep. And they were selling stuff as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It would have been pretty much the same type of store.
Interesting.
So
just side note, is that business still in business?
No, that business probably went out maybe 2 years ago.
Okay.
So,
all right. From retirement or from the whole brick and mortar thing?
I honestly don't know. I would assume that it was just time. You know, that the market had shrunk that much.
All right.
That it just wasn't worth having it anymore.
Interesting. So that long ago, eBay was probably a big thing back then, right?
Right. Yeah. And honestly, I've messed around with eBay a lot. I never have had a lot of success with eBay.
All right.
When I first started, we started on a website called half.com, which is no longer in existence now, but it was actually owned by eBay at the time. And half.com was basically eBay's version of a store that only sold CDs, DVDs, and books. And that's what we were focused in. So we just put everything on half.com and started there. And then a few years into it, Amazon kind of came onto the scene. Amazon was always there, but it really came on the scene. And I said, and somebody had told me that if you're doing books, you should really be looking into Amazon. So then I looked into Amazon, started selling books on Amazon, and then pretty much everything moved over to Amazon.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's so at what point, how long ago are we talking?
2005, probably.
Okay.
So probably a year and a half into it was when Amazon really became like, okay, this is where we need to be.
All right.
So
15 years ago, you got on the Amazon train.
Yep.
So I would say that that's some strong foresight. So you've probably seen them change quite a bit over the past 15 years.
Oh yeah. Big time. And in fact, like a lot of people will ask me when they hear that I focus mainly in books and media, they're like, why are you in that space? Like it's such a dead space. And the reason why I'm in it is because back 15 years ago, when you wanted to sell on Amazon, that's the only thing you could sell. They hadn't opened up their marketplace to any other items at that point. So I started in what they were doing, and I've played around with leaving that category, but never enough to the margins in books are so much greater than what you find in the other categories that it just has never made sense to me to make the jump.
Nice.
So
15 years, you're 20, mid 20s. So how does it feel? Well, let me back up a step. When you had this inventory and you decided to sell it, was the idea that I'm just going to sell this stuff and get a job? Or was the idea that I'm going to sell this stuff and use that for a launching point to launch my own business without this other clown?
I guess I would say that it never really crossed my mind that it would turn into a business. It really didn't. I had all this stuff and I said, well, I'll buy from you. And I was just going to start selling it. And I was actually very slow on taking that leap where I became a business, where I would consider it, especially going full-time business. Like I literally got to the point where I realized that if I wanted to ever sleep again, I had to either give up the business or I had to give up the job.
Oh, funny.
So if anybody were to ask me, I would tell them that I waited way too long to make that leap.
All right.
So.
All right. And what were you doing for a day job at the time?
I worked for a company that I didn't work for Cisco. And when I say Cisco, the computer company, not the food company, because that's
okay.
The most common thing I've ever heard get confused.
The big Cisco.
Yeah. But
really big Cisco.
Yeah. But I was working for another company that had a contract with them. And we worked on renewing these big elaborate agreements they have with their clients for all their networking equipment.
Gotcha. All right. So that was probably pretty lucrative at the time too, right?
It was all right.
Okay.
It was for my age. I did pretty well with it.
Okay.
But no, by no means like, was it a job you wanted to do for the next 30 years of your life? Put it that way.
Okay. All right. All right. That's fair. I just want to pause for a second. Is there a beeping on your end?
No.
I don't think so. I keep hearing this beeping every 10 seconds or something like that. Yeah, it just went.
Hold on.
You don't hear it?
Hold on. Give me 1 second. Did you hear it again?
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Yeah, that's the guy downstairs scanning books.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, funny. Like it makes a noise?
Yeah, the scanner makes a little beep when it, I don't really... But I can't imagine that it's picking it up.
Yeah, it's all right. It's all right. It's not
fine.
A big deal.
Okay.
I was just like some like it's recording kind of thing, whatever. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
Doesn't matter. We'll cut that out. Okay. So you had this inventory, were you just in an apartment at the time?
Yeah. Well, okay. So I was in the military, so I had a duplex that I owned, but it was pretty much apartment sized.
Okay.
So I had bought a duplex when I was in the military. So when I had came home, I had a house to live in, but it was a very small duplex. So it was pretty much apartment sized, but it did have a good sized basement.
So all right.
That was where everything was stored at that point in time.
Very cool. Very cool. So you're selling the stuff just individually online on half.com. When did the moment come where you're like, you know what? Maybe I should quit my job and actually make a business out of this.
So that was 2010.
Okay.
So as you can see, it was quite a ways. And
yeah, you're talking 5 years.
Yeah. And it was basically my wedding present to myself. Was I got married and I said, this is it. This is it. After we're married, man, I'm quitting my job and we're seeing where this goes. So
did your new bride know that?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
This was discussed. Yes.
Okay. I'm like, hey, funny story. Quit my job. Nice. Okay. Was she cool with it? Or was she like, let's just see how this goes? Or what was her reaction?
Yeah. Yeah. Like the one thing I can say about my wife, my girlfriend at that point in time she has always been my biggest fan, my biggest supporter.
All right.
So when I sat down and said, I think we should I can do this and I think I can make it work. She was just like, as long as you think you can make it work, I support you in it. So,
all right.
So
very cool. Very cool. So is she now working with you or is that she's got her own thing going on?
She is a photographer.
Okay.
She does do stuff with me. She helps me a lot, mm-hmm. but she's also gone off and started her own company,
which gotcha. Is
very much in its infancy. So
very cool. Very cool. So you got your own gig, you got married. Then I imagine you're thinking, I got to get more stuff so I can sell more stuff. Right.
Yep. Yeah. And that was, I didn't really have to. So at that point, we had grown obviously past that original inventory. At that point in time, we were going out to thrift stores all over the state. We even at a point in time, and I should prelude at a certain point in time, I don't remember exactly where it was. My brother came in and became a partner in this.
Oh, business. Nice. Okay.
He has since left and now it's my business again, all alone. But that's why I say we. Because it was me and him going out and doing this. And so we would travel around the country working on different things, different stores all over pretty much the Midwest. We went anywhere from starting in Wisconsin all the way down to Chicago, out to Ohio as far.
Wow.
At points in time. And so we did that for several years. And once... we kind of hit a wall because Amazon changed a bunch of policies and overnight, pretty much all the inventory we were selling just became unprofitable.
Oh, are you kidding?
Because of the fees that they hiked up.
Oh. So
we were playing a game where we were living with very low margins, selling a lot of items. And overnight with these fee changes, it just pretty much went away.
Wow. So you're talking about just a gross volume of product that you're pushing.
Yeah.
But I imagine it's still probably fairly time consuming to deal with the ordering thing, posting it. And then once you get the order, you got to package it, ship it out and all that jazz.
Yeah. And Amazon does have a program, which we were at that point in time and still today are using very heavily where I just prep it, ship it into Amazon's warehouse. And they, when the customer purchases it, they ship it to the customer.
All right.
Which made it way more streamlined and a lot easier because we didn't have to have the warehouse space. We didn't have to worry about picking certain orders by a deadline. Mm-hmm. You know, it just as we could get the orders out the door to Amazon from there, they just took care of it all for us.
Interesting. So what changed with Amazon fees that you got over that hurdle, I guess, and still kept selling with them?
So after that happened, that was when my brother. So after that happened, we were very bitter about it. Mm. And so for about 6 to 8 months, we started trying to create like a wholesale business.
All right. Very
similar to what I'm doing now, but but it didn't work as well. It wasn't nearly as successful as the one that I've got going now, but we started doing a wholesale business and we just dropped Amazon completely.
All right.
And we did that for about 6 to 8 months. Once we realized that that wasn't going to be that effective, then that's when he bailed out. And then I was sitting there thinking, okay, what's the next step? What do I want to do? And I looked at it and I said, okay, the problems we had before with Amazon was the margin thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's a big one.
Yeah. I devised a plan where I was like, okay, I'm only going to sell things that have this huge margin on them.
All right.
So, and that's what I started doing. And I have dropped that margin down considerably now since then, but it's still triple the margin that we were looking at back before this all happened.
Gotcha. So, yeah. Jeff Bezos is famous for saying your margin is my opportunity. So it's just going to undercut you till you're bleeding.
Yeah.
I guess
that's why if you sell on Amazon, never, never try to compete with Amazon.
All right.
Try to exist in a place where they don't exist, because there's plenty of products on Amazon that Amazon themselves do not have any, they're not selling at all.
Yeah.
And that's where you got it. That's where you find these gaping margins is in those products that it's only third party sellers selling them. It's not
okay. Selling them. All right. So I imagine you're still selling books, right?
Yep.
Okay. So if I'm looking for a given book, let's just say the Bold Business Book, right? Let's just say I sold zillions of copies of those. And so there actually is a used market for them.
Mm-hmm.
They showed up used on Amazon as soon as I published it new. So I don't know how that game works. I don't know if you would know how that game works, but
that's interesting.
Oh yeah.
That probably shouldn't happen that fast, but that's,
oh, it was immediate. Immediate for really? All my books did that. Yeah.
Huh.
It was a weird thing, right? It still is, because I've sold a lot of books, but I wouldn't call it enough to justify the market, the used market that shows up for those books.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like I've sold a few thousand, something like that. But when you look on Amazon, you look at used, there's dozens of businesses selling my books used. Like,
so
that's not real.
I could give you a theory on why that would be.
Very interested.
There's a very, very small niche market on Amazon. And what they do mm-hmm. is they basically extract all the listings from Amazon. Mm-hmm. They look at the pricing on those listings. They jack the pricing up by $5 or $10. And then they list it under their account on Amazon.
All right.
And if for some reason somebody buys it from them, they just go and buy it from a different seller on Amazon and have it shipped to the customer. And I be willing to bet you that those first people you saw, your listing for your book just showed up on their list and they just loaded it into their system. So what they were probably doing is there were probably new copies of your book being sold cheaper than they were selling them used.
Sure. Yeah. And, yeah. A lot of them
were
just so oddly priced. Yeah.
Yeah. So if one of theirs would have sold, they would have just bought it new from one of those cheap sellers and just had that seller ship it to their customer. It's a huge market. I don't encourage anybody to ever try that market, because you're just waiting for your account to be killed.
Yeah, it sounds shady. You're essentially banking on people's suckerness.
Yeah, and it's nearly impossible to do nowadays on Amazon, because they require you to submit tracking on everything. And if you don't hit a certain metric on this tracking, you're going to run into problems. And that's very hard to do when you're not shipping the item out.
Yeah. Interesting.
So
interesting. I just figured it was Amazon trying to undercut me. Essentially, if they sell the book used, right, which it's print on demand. That was kind of the big thing. Like, how are there used copies when it's print on demand?
Mm-hmm.
So it's print on demand, and some of the used books used in air quotes, right, were showing up at less than what retail is. A tiny fraction less, but still less. And Amazon, a lot of people are going there for the deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
So instead of whatever, 16, 20 bucks, whatever it was 15 or 19 or whatever. Mm-hmm. Whatever it was like 25 cents less or something, where someone could potentially click on that and buy it. And then I wondered if that was just Amazon's way to cut me as the author out.
Yeah, I can't really say. I don't know. But
no, it's just a weird, you know, a weird phenomenon. But yeah, I digress. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. We're not making a whole lot of money off books anyways. Yeah. So I don't know how many people that are. Not, I guess, authors of books, I should say.
Yeah.
You're doing just fine.
Yeah.
So tell me, you've advanced now to the point of growing beyond the basement of a duplex and into a warehouse. Is that right?
That's correct. Yep.
All right. And when did that happen?
That was probably, so when I started that initial wholesale business,
mm-hmm.
we started moving at a point in time. What we were going to do is, and this is very common in the Amazon selling media world.
Yeah.
Was we were going to order Gaylords of books. If you're familiar with what a Gaylord is, it's the big cardboard box that fits on top of a pallet.
Okay.
Call it a Gaylord.
So huge volumes of books.
Yeah. And at one point in time, I was given the opportunity to buy, but I had to buy it by the semi load.
Wow. A
semi full of media.
Okay.
They called it mixed media. It was anything, CD, DVD, whatever they had that they were just going to throw into these Gaylords and they would ship them to us. So. Wow. So when that came up, I said, we can try this, but we got to have a space.
All right.
So we went, I went and found, it was basically just a storage unit, indoor climate controlled storage unit. Ironically, that storage unit had, had internet already in it, which I was like, why? But they did.
Yeah. I mean, so, that's awesome.
Yeah. So, and it had power in the unit and everything. It was just set up perfectly.
Wow.
So we started doing that and we did that one time. And I said, I will never do that again. Cause it was just such a pain to deal
with. All right. Well, I imagine a lot of the stuff was probably not saleable.
Yep. Yep. A lot of just garbage. And it was just, we weren't equipped. We didn't have the equipment that you need to tip these Gaylords over, get the items out. So we had people sitting inside the Gaylords digging stuff out, and it just took forever.
All right.
I mean, I probably took us 30 days to get through that truckload.
Oh my gosh.
So, yeah. And when it was all done, like, as you can probably imagine, 90% of it was just garbage.
Right. Oh, 90%.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, 90% like of it 20. Was just throwaway stuff.
All right.
And the rest of it. And there was a lot of good stuff in there, but it was just wasn't worth the labor to do it.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. You're painting for gold at that point.
Yeah. So
interesting.
So we did that and I said I would never do it again, but we kept the warehouse anyways because it was just an ideal situation. It worked very well.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, at this point, this is like 2016 that this happened.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Not that long ago. Experience. So at that point in time, I had been working from home so long that I kind of enjoyed having the separation of not having, I mean, yes, I still worked at home because I could do a lot of things from my laptop, but I could still leave a lot of it at the end of the day and go home.
Right. Totally understand. I think a lot of people understand that now.
Yeah. So I kept that warehouse just for that reason. But then as this has progressed now I have to have a warehouse because it's just grown so big that it, once again, I would never be able to do it out of my house.
All right.
So
do you must have employees now?
No, not really. I have people that help me. That's
okay.
So,
all right.
So, I try to do very flexible scheduling where they only have to work when they want to work and things like that, just because that's kind of what I like about my business. So if I have people working for me, I want to give them the same opportunity so they can have the same treat that I have, where they don't have to, I don't write up a schedule or anything like that. They just come when they want to. They message me and say, hey, can I come work today?
Nice. All right.
So
are you, it sounds like you're no longer buying stuff by the Gaylord, or at least not from those companies.
No, all my product now does come in on pallets, but it's way different now, because now my suppliers, I've worked it out where they send me a list of what they have available.
Oh, nice.
And I had a custom piece of software written that I can run this list through this software. It gives me a whole bunch of Amazon data about that, those products.
Wow.
And I just filter down based on those, that information, to what I think can sell profitably. And then I just order everything off the list I think is profitable to sell.
Okay. You, in that few sentences, you just went through some huge stuff there. One, you had custom software written?
Yes.
Wow. So it just looked at ISBN numbers or UPC?
Yeah.
Codes?
So I submit a list of ISBN numbers and the price that they want for it. And then it's just a piece of software that it grabs. Amazon has an API where they make all their pricing information available. Mm-hmm. And it just goes up, grabs all that information from Amazon, and just attaches it basically to the spreadsheet. So I get it back and it tells me all the different pertinent information I want to know from Amazon.
That's incredible. How did you find someone to write code like that?
So it's kind of funny, because about a year and a half ago, I just saw something on a message board that a guy wanted to start a mastermind of Amazon sellers. And I'm like, I'd be interested in that. So I reached out to him. We started this mastermind. And one of the guys that then came into the mastermind he's been an Amazon seller almost as long as I have, but his model is very different from me. He's very, very data analytical. Mm-hmm. So this was I basically told him when I first started doing this, there was just an over the counter software I could subscribe to that did exactly what this new software does, but it took 24 hours to run one of my lists through
that
piece of software. And I told him that, and he's like, that doesn't make any sense. He's like, you should be able to do that in 13 minutes. That's how long that list should be able to.
Wow. All right.
So then I said, well, can you write a program for me that would do that? And he's like, and he actually took it. It now takes 3 minutes to run, because what he does is he caches all the data on his server.
Okay.
So my data that I get is not 100% up to date, but it serves a purpose just fine.
Sure. It's close enough.
Yeah.
So, and then the wholesalers that you're buying this product from, they're allowing you to go line by line to say yay or nay.
Yep. Exactly.
Wow. And essentially you're just picking stuff that has a good enough margin.
Yep.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
That is super cool.
And it is also a model that I've never seen anybody else do.
All right.
And I've never seen anybody that has an arrangement like that with somebody to purchase that way.
Yeah.
So
interesting. So are these wholesalers, are they just buying libraries, or where are they getting their volume from?
Pretty much. So the funniest part about all this is that all of my wholesalers are Amazon sellers,
which
is just bizarre. But there's a lot of reasons why this works, and it's because they're doing, you say they're are they buying libraries? Kind of, yes. So one of them has deals with just literally thousands of libraries across the country. And whenever the library has books that they no longer want, that they're no longer keeping in circulation, they basically just send these books off to this company. And the other one runs this massive site on the internet that you can just go to and you can scan your book or CD into, and they'll make you a cash offer for it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And that's how they get all their inventory.
That I want to pause for a second, because this blows my mind. That, because you take a product like a book, right? So let's just say on the high side, $25. You have so many hands and trucks and pallets and shelves touching that book before it gets to the consumer, that for a used book to, for anyone in that line to make any money off selling that used book, just blows my mind.
Yeah, it's well, and yeah, that's why where you come into the world where 90% of what you'll pick up is garbage.
Sure.
Because the stuff that I sell is not going to be something that you're going to walk into a Barnes and Noble and buy. It's going to be rare, out of print. It's going to be stuff that, you know, they only ran, like James Kateman book could potentially be a very good seller for me because there just isn't enough of them in circulation for Amazon to keep it in stock.
Well, I'll get you a bunch of them, man. Let's make some money.
So
that's fun. You know, I came across this book, it was recommended by a friend. I want to say The Gray Seas Under. Super cool book about this little tugboat in the Atlantic off Canada that just would rescue ships. Super cool book. I want to say it's printed 30, 40 years ago. It's a while. And I looked for that book on Amazon just as a recommendation. And I want to say I saw a new one for hundreds of dollars. Hundreds of dollars. I'm like, what? This is like college textbook pricing. They just like, they got you, they're going to gouge you kind of thing. Like, this is just a casual read. Yeah. So I've all of a sudden like, whoa, what is this thing? So I found a used one on Amazon, whatever. I didn't pay that kind of money for it. But I showed the link to my buddy because I'm like, what is this book made of? Like, did they put a sheet of gold in there or something like that? But it's interesting. Must have been out of print. I don't know if it's rare. Yeah.
And you'll see books. If you scour Amazon, you'll see books where the low price on it is $900 or something like that.
That's crazy.
It's just a supply and demand thing. It's all right. Where more than likely that person that's selling it for $900 is one of those drop shippers that I was telling you about that buys it from another person and sells it. And whatever software they're using to set their price just jacked the price up really high because they know they're going to have to pay a ton for it if it ever sells.
Just hope it.
So a lot of that is like pricing anomalies, I would call it. It's a lot of people call it a repricer going haywire because on Amazon sellers, I have a program that sits in the background, watches the Amazon market and adjusts prices based on what the Amazon market's doing.
Really? Okay. Yeah.
So well,
that's super cool.
So you can set rules and things like that within that repricer, but there's only so much you can do. And every once in a while they'll go haywire. And the important thing to know too is that 95% of people that are selling books on Amazon really don't know what they're doing. So when they set up these repricers, they have no idea what they're setting. So a lot of times they'll set it up really weird where it'll do just things that don't make any sense.
Interesting. All right. So when your competition, so to speak, on Amazon, is it the mom and pop shops that are just selling, like they happen to have a bookstore, a used bookstore, and they're just trying to find a market?
Yeah, there's probably 95% of those, but then there's a lot of other types of people out there. I mean, one of my suppliers, like I said, is an Amazon seller themselves, and their revenue for a year is $65 million. So there are some very large sellers also doing this. And to the best of my knowledge, that supplier that I have is actually the second largest bookseller on Amazon. So there's actually one that's bigger than that. So
they're doing $65 million, $10 or so at a time.
Not even $10 at a time. Most of the stuff I'm going to tell you, they're probably selling. They're making maybe $2 on an item. But they're literally selling, you know, thousands and thousands of items a day.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That seems like an awful lot of work for $2.
I do, like, those companies are doing, like I talked about with the Gaylord thing, that's their whole business. They do the Gaylords. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how they manage to do, but they're literally running through 200,000 books a day, probably in their warehouses. So,
wow. All right, I want to shift and talk about CDs and DVDs.
Okay.
I can see that the flow of the way that people consume media now is changing. I still love my CDs and I watch DVDs every once in a while, but there's Netflix and Hulu and 50 million other places that want to take your money to show you a movie that you may vaguely be interested in.
Mm-hmm.
How has the market changed with CDs and DVDs or Blu-rays, whatever, in the past?
It has become a lot smaller. Okay. I can tell you that, but the beauty of it is that the market is still way big enough that a person like me can make the little bit of money that I need to make out of that market.
Okay.
And people a lot of times will ask me, well, when are you going to stop selling DVDs? Or when are you going to sell? I don't actually sell DVDs. I only sell CDs. But
oh, gotcha.
When are you going to stop selling CDs? And like that market is dead. And I'm like, when is the CD market going to die? And I'm like, it's already dead. so the way I see it, like I figure my generation and prior are the only people left still buying CDs.
Yeah. Okay. So
I don't really put a lot of attention in CDs. The way I do CDs has been done the same way for the past 6 years.
Okay.
And I don't ever change anything. I just keep it going, just waiting for the day where people stop buying them. But I don't see that day coming anytime soon.
No, I'm still old school, but I'm also, I like to own it. I like to have it.
Yeah.
And I go through enough cars where, you know, sometimes I still have my cassettes. Sometimes you buy a car that's only got a cassette player and you want some tunes. So that's what you're going to do.
And believe it or not, there are still people out there selling cassettes on Amazon too. So
there's, wow.
Yeah. That market still exists.
That's so cool. I heard that when, I can't think of the movie where the guy to Walkman space Marvel movie, whatever, with little raccoon guy. Oh, my mind is blank with that now.
So wait, you're thinking of one of these cartoon movies, right?
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, never seen it. So
all right, okay. You're probably the only one. Anyways,
probably.
Guy is on there with his little Walkman throwing a cassette in there, and I had my little brother, my big brother's big sister's little brother, ask me, "What is that?" I'm like, "What do you mean, what is that?" Like, that's what we used to go to the mall for, man. And then he's like, what's a mall?
Yeah. And that's literally, that's the way the market is, but it's still big enough to sustain. And and the way I see it is I figure I got 10 years left of, I need to be selling CDs.
All right.
People like you are not going to die in the next 10 years. So,
well, we certainly hope not.
Yeah. So I think I'm good to go.
That's cool. That is cool. So in regards to the CDs, are you getting those essentially from the same wholesalers, or are you going to Goodwill or whatever and just buying out their whole?
Ironically, this whole wholesaler structure started with the CDs because I found the wholesaler through CDs first. At the time, they were only doing CDs.
All right.
And I did the CDs for about a year and a half. Then they got into books.
All right.
And then I started playing around with the books. And then from that, then I went out and found the other wholesaler to get more books in, because the other wholesaler is completely book focused. They don't do anything CDs or.
All right. All right. That is cool. Yeah. So are you essentially just selling books and CDs, or have you branched out into other areas as well?
I played around with other things, and it's just, I always come back to, like, I'll test out this market and I'll have some success in it. It'll be fine. But I never scale it to the point where I can really say it was a success. And then I just get annoyed with it it just gets pushed to the side, and I don't really, because I'm just doing so well with the books that I've never it's never become a big part of my business.
All right. That's fair.
Totally fair. Me and my software, the guy that wrote my custom software, he wants to work on a special program that focuses on stuff, not books, this year.
All right.
So the idea is that maybe I'll tap into that program and I'll give it another try for non-book products.
Nice.
This year, but we'll see how that goes.
All right. So you also help people get started on Amazon. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. How big of your job, let's say, from a time point of view, is that?
So basically what I, with the wholesale side or the help, when you say I'm not coaching people per se, I will coach them if they need the coaching, but the main focus of it is that I allow other people to tap into my suppliers and order books from them the same way I order books.
Gotcha. Okay.
So that's where that program comes from. And it has actually become one of the biggest focuses of my time now, because what we have found to be way more beneficial. When I first set it up, I envisioned people ordering items and then they would be shipped to them and they would do what their thing with them. Well, we found that it's way more cost effective for them to come in here and then I prep everything and ship it to the Amazon warehouse on their behalf.
Wow.
So, all right. And so that's like become the biggest time consume of my business, is just prepping all the stuff that comes in for me as well as all the stuff that comes in for these customers, because the margins are much smaller with the wholesale customers. So I'm obviously processing through a lot more items.
Yeah.
So just having the time to can flip all that stuff around and get it sent out is where the biggest time constraint is.
All right. So, is that more lucrative than doing your own thing?
So it is not more lucrative. The thing I like about it is that any issues I've ever had with cash flow in my business have gone completely away by having this model.
Gotcha. Okay.
So essentially, I order in the books. By the time I process everything through and send it out for my wholesalers, they've paid for all the books. Everything. Nice. My books too. So when I send my books to Amazon, I don't have to now sit and wait 6 months to get my money out of it. I've already paid for the books with the money from the wholesalers. And now all of the money coming in from Amazon is just profit for me.
Nice. So, all right. All right. Let's talk about capacity. Because it sounds like you have a few people helping you on the fly as needed. Mm-hmm. But there's also space, because some of the stuff takes up space. Though if you're sending it to Amazon right away, maybe it's not an issue.
It's not too much of an issue, but I still have pallets laying around that have to be processed through. So, so space is
pallets of stuff.
Yeah. So I mean, right now downstairs, I have two pallets sitting there waiting to be processed. So,
all right.
So the space is an issue, even though it does inevitably turn around and go back out to Amazon.
All right.
For the most part. So, the space and capacity. This is when I first started this, it was really funny because I never thought I would ever hit a ceiling on capacity.
Sure.
And now it's grown way bigger than I ever thought it would. And now I'm starting to see, okay, maybe there are capacity issues to this. Maybe my suppliers are going to run out of books at some point in time because the last few months have been kind of like I've had supplier or clients coming to me and saying, where's all the stuff? Because I'm not getting nearly as much as I have been getting from it.
So I guess I don't know for sure, but in regards to our local library here, they're not closed, but they're 98% closed. Correct. So I imagine they're probably not even processing getting rid of books.
That's could be a huge part of the problem. Mm-hmm. I think my big part of the problem for the last few months has been that I think these people are retail focused first before they do wholesale.
Okay.
And I think because of Christmas, they've been cutting back what they're going to do wholesale.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
To keep the bandwidth open for the increased demand during Christmas.
Sure. So have you seen this before in years past?
So no, because I was never ordering at the capacity I'm ordering now.
Oh, gotcha.
There was probably never an issue. Like it could have happened years past, but it would have never been at the capacity, you know, like there still would have always been way more than I needed there.
Sure.
So
interesting. That's cool. Well, I mean, that's a good problem.
Yeah.
You know that you've hit that volume threshold where you know, like, oh, here's a problem I didn't even know existed.
And it's extremely difficult to get another supplier. So, right. You know, okay. Because it is a very unorthodox way of purchasing books that most
essentially one by one.
Yeah. So what the people I've approached about doing this, they're kind of like, why would we do that? You know, like,
we're going to give you a pallet of stuff. Hope it's good.
Yeah. And they're like, well, we'll sell you Gaylords. And, you know, and that's just, they're going to throw random stuff in Gaylords. And I don't want to ever go down that band because sure. I don't want to deal with the waste of it.
Right.
I want to have to get rid of 90% of the books.
Yeah. You're essentially paying for somebody else's trash in the hopes that there's something to justify the time.
Yeah. For the 10%, that's good.
And yeah.
So I'm kind of at that. That's where I'm at today where, okay, how do I expand this further or what do I start looking into? Like you had said, other categories to go mm-hmm. into and stuff like that. So
interesting. Oh, that's cool. That's super cool. Yeah. What have been some of the challenges that you came across besides this whole running out of inventory or product thing that you didn't anticipate over the 15 years you've been doing this?
The hard lessons when Amazon did that fee increase and stuff like that, that was a real eye opener. One of the hardest things that I realize now, and this is a huge part of the reason why I started the wholesale part of it, was because I realized, and I actually think this is something that you say in your book, yeah. having one customer is a terrible idea.
Yeah.
And when you're selling on Amazon, even though you're selling to millions of people, you really only have one customer.
Yeah.
At any point in time, Amazon can take all those customers away.
Yeah. They prove that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So that was where the whole motivation for the wholesale thing came from, is it took me 13, 15 years to figure it out. But like, I need to figure out something that I can do that does not, even though it is kind of directly related to Amazon,
mm-hmm.
it's not, my money is not coming from Amazon.
Right.
You know, so that was one of the biggest obstacles. And then when I started that wholesale business, one of the hardest parts about it was when you're an Amazon seller, marketing is not really a thing you ever think about.
Sure.
You know, getting clients is not a thing you ever think about. You know, you just source the inventory and Amazon brings the customers to you.
All right.
So then I start this wholesale thing and I sit there and I say, okay, so now how do I get somebody to sign up for this?
Just you stare know? At the phone and will it.
Yeah. But the blessing in disguise with it was that with a wholesale client, all my wholesale clients are worth, I get a wholesale client, one that I would consider a real client, that's worth $15,000, $20,000 worth of sales.
Nice. Okay.
So the good part about it is, yes, now I've kind of learned how to market, mm-hmm. but I'm blessed also in the sense that I don't have to get, you know, I don't have to market to 1,000 people. I only need to market to, like, my whole goal was to get 10 people, which I've gotten to. So while I still feel blessed because the marketing side of it was easy for me because mm-hmm. there was only 10 clients instead of 1,000 clients, mm-hmm. but that was the scariest part about it, was because I had never done marketing up to that.
Interesting.
At all in my business. Interesting. So
that is cool. So you, just to clarify, I guess what you said before, you don't have to do even Amazon ads or something. There's enough people looking for the products that you're selling.
Yeah, that- like Amazon ads is really what it that's designed for, is if you're going to launch your brand new product that mm-hmm. has never been on Amazon to Amazon and sell it. Well, what's going to happen is you're going to create that product on Amazon, and Amazon's going to give it no weight whatsoever.
All right.
They're going to pretend like it doesn't exist. They're going to assume nobody wants it.
Sure. Yeah.
And what will happen? So that then you start targeting ads to it. That gets people to buy it. And once people start buying that on Amazon, that gives it more weight. It starts, that's where you start getting organic people to organic customers to come to that listing and buy it.
All right.
With what I do, all of this stuff already has that weight underneath it because it already exists today on Amazon.
Interesting. Okay.
So I get that organic traffic right away without doing anything.
Nice.
So yeah, there's no marketing whatsoever.
So the market's there. You get the Charlotte's Web book or whatever. Someone's already looking for that. You don't have to push it.
Exactly.
You just have to compete with whoever else is selling Charlotte's Web.
It's Web. Exactly.
Interesting. And the software that you have helps you figure out an ideal price.
Exactly.
That's cool. That's super cool.
So it's very much more like being just a wholesaler for Amazon.
Yeah.
Not being a, you know, like a traditional business that's got to drive up their customers and things like that. It's
right.
Just wholesaling directly to Amazon and letting Amazon take care of it, all that for you. So
what is compelling about your business is that you can essentially set your own hours, like yep. almost to a fault, right? There's a huge volume of freedom there, but there's also the physical contact that you have with the product. That it's not exactly a live on the beach kind of thing.
In no, no, it cannot be done remotely, unfortunately.
Yeah. So it's interesting hybrid model, I guess, so to speak, but there's something to be said about having the freedom to work when you want to work kind of thing. Like there's no, you're not committed, I imagine, to the most part of having to be sitting at your desk at 3 p.m. or whatever.
Yeah. The way I describe it to people is that I work unless there's something going on. If I, you know what I mean? Like, and that's really how it is. Like Monday through Sunday, I literally, I have nothing going on, I'm going to be here working. But if something comes up on a Tuesday at 2:00, well, then I'm just going to go do my own thing.
That is awesome.
You know, so.
That is cool.
Yeah.
That is cool. Eric, this has been awesome. I want to ask you just really quick, where did the name come from, the Kings Ridge Media?
This is a very funny story, actually.
All right.
So me and my brother, who was my partner at a point in time. So we started out, I came up with the name, which was a very bad idea. I came up with the name of Extreme Media. And we played on a volleyball team and we made our company we made it the sponsor of our volleyball team. So we all had Extreme Media shirts.
Extreme Media. Aren't
now, to ask you, what do you think of when you think of Extreme Media?
I kind of go to porn, but I don't know why.
That's exactly what everybody would come up and say. You got a porn shop to sponsor you?
And I don't know why my brain went there, but.
Yeah. So we're like, well, maybe that's not the best name. So then I just told my brother, I'm like, my brother is a much more avid reader than I am. So okay. He's constantly reading. So I said, just pick something out of a book you're reading and that's just what we'll do. You pick a name and we'll put media at the end and that'll be the name of the company. So he picked Kings Bridge. Okay. Which was the name of a town in a book he was reading or something like that.
All right.
So when he told me that this is what he wanted, I heard Kings Ridge. And I immediately went and registered the domain, kingsridgemedia.com. And then I told him, okay, it's there. Go check it. He kept typing it in. He's like, it's not coming up. It's not coming up. And then finally we figured out that I didn't hear him right. And it was actually, he said bridge, not ridge. So, and I'm like, well,
it's already up, brother. Yeah,
I'm like, ridge it is, you know, like, so.
Funny. So, I like it. It's less porn like, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
So
Eric, if someone was interested in getting a little bit of help selling on Amazon, are you a person that they could talk to?
Definitely. I love, like, I will not ever, like, at least unless you start calling me every day, I'll never ask for money for a one-time sit down to answer your questions and stuff.
All right. Nice. So,
and you can just reach out to me. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook. You can go to my website, kingsridgemedia.com. And there's a little contact in at the bottom of the page that you can email me.
Very cool.
And yeah, definitely. I'd love to sit down with anybody interested in it.
Awesome. Well, Eric, this has been super cool. I feel like we could talk for a lot longer, but we got to button it up to make sure that we fit in our radio slot. That's how it rolls, right?
Yeah.
This has been Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggles, the stories, and the triumphant successes of business owners across the land. Coming to you, Eric, where are you?
Appleton, Wisconsin.
Appleton, Wisconsin. I'm just outside of Madison, Wisconsin, hence our crazy Wisconsin accents. It's just long, yeah. My name is James Kateman, and Authentic Business Adventures is brought to you by Calls on Call, offering call answering and receptionist services for service businesses across the country on the web at callsoncall.com, as well as Draw In Customers Business Coaching, offering business coaching services for entrepreneurs in all stages of their business on the web at drawincustomers.com. And of course, The Bold Business Book, a book for the entrepreneur and all of us, available on Amazon and wherever fine books are sold, both new and used, right? We'd like to thank you, our wonderful listeners, as well as our guest, Eric Wolterkens, president and founder of King Ridge Media. Find us airing locally on 103.5 Wednesdays at 1 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m., as well as at drawincustomers.com. Just click that little podcast link. Eric, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
This is super cool. Why don't you tell people how to get a hold of you again just one more time?
You can connect with Eric Wolterkens on LinkedIn or Facebook, or just go to Kings, K-I-N-G-S, Ridge, R-I-D-G-E, media.com. And there's a contact button that you can click on there to send me an email.
Awesome. I love it. Eric, this has been super cool. I wish you great success in the next, I guess, 10 years, since that's all you really need. We'll just go from there. CDs and books will still be selling.
Yep.
All right. Well, to everyone else out there, I want you to do me a huge favor. Like, subscribe, share, get the world to know Eric. And then stay awesome. And of course, enjoy your business.